This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky, sitting in for Ira Flatow. I know you've had your calendar marked for quite some time. The cake has been ordered, the decorations hung, the porch light has been lit for your annual Moth Week celebration. We're in the middle of the fifth annual National Moth Week, and here to guide us in our celebration is one of the co-founders of the National Moth Week Observance. Elena Tartaglia is assistant professor of biology at Bergen Community College in Paramus, New Jersey. Welcome back to the show, and happy Moth Week to you.
Thanks, John.
I'm really glad you're here. So we got a lot of moth questions, and if you have a question for us, 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. Maybe if you have a favorite moth, or if you're a moth aficionado. A question I'm sure you get a lot is, what's the difference between a moth and a butterfly?
That's a great question, and one that I really never get tired of answering. So from a taxonomic perspective, there really isn't a difference. This just speaks to our need as humans to classify things as either or. But there are a couple differences. If you're looking at an insect and you really need to know, is this a moth or a butterfly? The easiest thing to do is to look at the antennae. So butterflies have a little spoon-shaped antennae. It kind of looks like a Q-tip on the end. And moth antennae are pretty variable. So some of them have straight antennae, and a lot of the males of many species have these beautiful, long, feathery antennae. So that's one of the easiest ways to tell. And then the other almost foolproof method is that butterflies are all diurnal, so every butterfly is out during the day. There's no nighttime butterflies. So if you're looking at a lepidopteran in the daytime, it's probably a butterfly. There are a few moth species in the day, and if you're looking at a lepidopteran at night, you know it's a moth.
Ah, okay. So you love moths. A lot of people, can take moths or leave moths. So give us a pep talk about moths. Why should we care about them so much?
Well, moths are really important in ecosystems. And number one, they act as pollinators. So they aid in plant reproduction. And especially in the American Southwest, they're a very important suite of pollinators there. And they actually can carry pollen for very far distances. So bees are great pollinators. Other insects are great pollinators. Moths don't actually return to a nest at night. So they have the potential to carry pollen pretty far distances, which is really good for plant genetics because it can outcross a little farther. And additionally, moths are important parts of food webs. So they provide food for birds, for bats, as well as some mammals in addition.
You're talking about them and their role as pollinators. We've been worried about the bees and bee colonies. We've been worried about monarch butterflies, mm-hmm. whether or not they're getting enough food to make their migrations. Do we have worries about moths right now?
Yeah, unfortunately, we do see declines in some species. So moths aren't quite as well studied, and that is one of the goals of National Moth Week, is to look at moth populations. But they're not as well studied, but we are seeing declines in some species of moths, unfortunately. And a lot of that is down to, with a lot of conservation, you see habitat loss as the main factor in declines.
Why did you start studying moths?
That's also a really great question. I was working on my dissertation, and I wanted to study pollination in urban environments. And when you do a dissertation, you have to carve out your own little special niche. And not very many people in my area were studying that. And I saw a professor give a talk on moth pollination, and I was just fascinated. And so I started to look into moth abundance and diversity and pollination in urban environments in New York and New Jersey.
And it hooked you.
It really did. And so I started going to these moth nights in East Brunswick, and that's how Moth Week actually got started, just a couple of us going mothing in East Brunswick. And we thought, wouldn't it be fun to get everyone in New Jersey to do a moth night? And then as the night progressed, we just thought, wouldn't it be fun to get the whole U.S.? And then we thought, why not get the world? And we put it on social media, and we had interest all over the place, surprisingly. And now we have events. I think we have over 450 events in 42 countries this year.
How do you go mothing? What does mothing consist of?
So mothing is really easy. You need no special equipment. You can get special equipment, but all you need to do is set out a light. Now, I have a really strong full-spectrum mercury vapor bulb, but if you have ever come home late at night, you know that moths will fly to any porch light. So all you have to do is set out a light or turn on your porch light and then wait for them to come. And if you don't feel like sitting out all night, you can leave the light on all night and come out in the morning and you'll see what you got.
You know what my next question is, though. Why do they go to the light? Why are they always flickering around the light whenever I come home at night?
Yeah, so that's another question that, you know, as scientists, we can't ask a moth why it's flying to a light. So we have the best hypothesis is that moths actually, and other nocturnal creatures, actually navigate by guiding themselves to the brightest object in the night sky. Now, normally that's the moon, But when an entomologist puts out a moth light, that automatically now becomes the brightest object in the sky, and the moths will navigate towards that. Now, of course, it's not the moon. So once they get there, they're kind of dazzled by that bright light, and they go into their torpor, their sleep mode.
I want to get to a call here. Daniel is calling from Tacoma Park, Maryland. Hi, Daniel. What's your question?
Yeah, so every time you watch a cartoon and you see a cartoonist basically opening their closet, you see it like the moths fly out, and like they always go after the clothing. So why do moths eat clothing, and what is about it that attracts them to that?
Well, thank you very much for the question. Okay, do moths eat clothing, first of all, or is this a cartoon fantasy?
No, they do. Just a couple of them.
Oh, okay.
So not every moth, and not even most moths. Just a couple of moths will eat clothing, and they're attracted to the natural fibers. And so they're eating your wool sweaters and sometimes silks as well. So they're attracted to the natural fibers, and you can get rid of them by putting your clothes in the freezer if you have a moth infestation problem.
Hold it. You're putting your clothes in the freezer?
Yeah, that'll kill them.
Okay, so I don't know if I put all my clothes in the freezer if they'd all fit in there. Well, I want to talk about some of the moths that you brought in for us, and you have
sure.
a beautiful display here. I know that you selected one type of moth for special attention this year. Maybe you could point this out to me. What do you have?
Yeah, so we are doing the underwings this year. So for the past few years, National Moth Week, we've been highlighting a certain group, and this year we chose the underwings. And most underwings are in this genus called Catocala, which actually in Greek means beautiful underwing. And they are cryptic on the top, so when their wings are folded, they blend in with bark. And then when they are startled by a predator, their defense is to open their forewings, and their hind wings have these beautiful bright colors on them. And so it's the best hypothesis we have is that is to startle away their predators, which are some nocturnal birds.
Oh, interesting. So that's what the underwings are.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see them there. One of the things that's always fascinated me about moths is sometimes the camouflage, sometimes the gigantic eyes that mm-hmm. you'll see that will make it look like it's a bird or something else. What are some of the more amazing moth species that do something that we just probably couldn't have thought up ourselves? I mean, they do have some fairly unique patterns.
Yeah, so a couple of the other species that we actually have in this area, in the New York, New Jersey area, one of them is the Io moth. That one has the best eye spots to my knowledge. And so yeah, they can do that startle defense, and they can look like the predators of their predators. And so once they open their wings, their predator is startled because they think they're about to get eaten, perhaps.
Ah, okay. I got another call here. Mm-hmm. John is in Kingsport, Tennessee. Let's get to John. Hi there. You're on Science Friday.
How are you doing today?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
I'm having an invasion problem with pantry moths, and
Uh-oh.
They seem to be able to get into anything that's not glass or something. Is there any material they cannot chew through, and how can you get rid of this little pesky bug?
John, thank you very much for the phone call. A couple of moth-hating calls so far, Elena. You seem disappointed by this, but this is a problem. I've had pantry moths before, too, so what can you tell John?
That's okay. I've also had pantry moths. So you're doing the right thing by keeping your grains in glass, because they can't get through that, and they can't get through hard plastic. So as soon as you get your grains, do take them and put them into your nice-looking glass containers, which look better in your pantry anyway. And again, if you have problems with moths coming in the grains, you can store them in the freezer for a little bit, and that should take care of the problem. Unfortunately, if you already have a bad infestation, it might be time to start over your little grain pantry.
Yeah, and they really are hard to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are moths considered a pest species? I know there's just so many different types of them. When they chew through your clothes in your closet, or they eat your grains in your pantry, they are. But are they considered or classified a pest species in many places?
Well, you know, there's between 150 and 500,000 species of moth in the world.
So that's a few.
Yeah. So there are a couple that are pests, and unfortunately, those are the ones we interact with a lot. But the vast majority of moths are just neither help nor harm humans. And they don't care about us. We don't care about them. And then, of course, there are the beneficial ones, as I just mentioned, the pollinators, the ones that play important roles in food webs, the ones that we're modeling micro aerial vehicle flight after as well. So some of them can fly amazingly fast and very agile. And there are these tiny little micro aerial vehicles, we call them, that are modeled after the flight of some of these moths.
That's really interesting. I mentioned the monarch butterflies and their long migration. Do any moth species do something like this, long migrations over long distances?
Yeah, so moths actually can migrate long distances. I don't actually know the exact figures on that. And some of them can fly up to a couple of kilometers in one night. So a lot of them are quite long distance flyers.
And if you have questions, 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. Questions about moths or perhaps favorite moths. In this display that you brought me, there's one in the upper right-hand corner here. And you see it's gigantic. It's probably not even the biggest moth that you've seen. But what exactly is that? Maybe you can describe it for us and tell us what kind of moth that is.
Yeah, that's a Promethea moth, and that's in the family called the Saturniidae, the giant silkworm moths. And those are amazing because obviously they're beautiful to look at. And another weird fact about them is that as adults, those moths don't even have a mouth. They don't eat at all. So all the nutrition that they take in, they take in their larval or caterpillar stage. So when people are always like, oh, moths chew through clothes, these can't even do that.
So I'm confused by this, and I wanted to ask you about this. I've heard about a few different types of moth species that don't have mouths. So it comes out of being a caterpillar. It's a moth now, but it doesn't have a mouth. It can't take in any of its own nutrition?
No, that's true. And I think the trick is not to separate in your mind so much the larval stage from the adult stage. And just like you or I can store fat in our bodies, moths can do that as well. And so as adults, they just have stored fat left over from that larval stage. And, you know, they don't live very long. So those are some of the shortest lived moths. So they can, I think their max lifespan is probably about 10 days.
Okay. How long is a very long lifespan for a moth species?
Probably a couple of months. And I mean, even in the tropics where they have warm weather, because cold is a limiting factor for them up here, but even the tropics where they have long warm weather, they would have more broods per season, so more life cycles per season rather than longer lives.
I'm John Dankosky. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And we're talking about moths and Moth Week with Elena Tartaglia. She's assistant professor of biology at Bergen Community College in Paramus, New Jersey. She's co-founder of National Moth Week. You might not have known that it was National Moth Week, but it is. So we're celebrating with her. Let's go to Carol, who's calling from Old Lyme, Connecticut. Hi there, Carol.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. What's on your mind?
Oh, we have this new visitor to our yard, and we looked it up online, and it's called a hummingbird moth. We had never seen anything like it. We thought it was a baby hummingbird at first, but we noticed it had antennae, and more than two legs. Why are these so different in body shape and other types of morphology, like their wings, than other types of moths that you see?
Great question. Elena?
Oh, I love this question. Thank you. So I actually studied this type of moth for my graduate research, and these moths are mimics. So the one that you saw was probably, it was in the genus Hemeris, and some of those are mimics of hummingbirds, as you saw, and some of them are mimics of bumblebees. And so they kind of look a little bit like both. And these moths are some of the few diurnal or daytime moths. So they are acting as mimics, and they're protecting themselves from their predators that are mainly birds. And so in looking like a hummingbird, most birds probably won't eat a hummingbird. And then the ones that look like bees are actually mimicking something that can sting. And so in looking like bees or birds, they're actually protecting themselves from the fact that there are more predators of them out in the daytime.
You mentioned some of the camouflaging techniques or the ways in which moths can pretend to be a predator. Mm-hmm. What are some of the defense mechanisms that they have? Because there's a lot of predators out there. I'm sure a lot of birds and other things want to eat them. What are some of the really cool defense mechanisms?
Well, some of them are distasteful, just like monarch butterflies are. And if they've got bright colors, many of them do have chemicals in their bodies that make them taste bad. And a lot of the caterpillars will defend themselves by, again, mimicking snakes or by having postures that are just sort of threatening to birds or other predators.
If I wanted to attract moths into my yard, you know, you can talk about different sorts of gardens where you'd attract butterflies. Is it the same sort of thing? Are there types of plant species or other things that you would put in your yard to try to get more moths if indeed that's what you wanted?
Sure. Moths have a proboscis, just like a butterfly does, that straw-like mouth part. And so you want to look for flowers that have a tubular shape that they can drink from. And in addition, since moths are mostly out at night, you want to look for flowers that are open at night and producing nectar at night and are white or light colored so that the moths can see them. Additionally, moth flowers often have a very strong scent to them because moths have a very strong olfactory system. So look for flowers like that, and you should be able to attract moths. And another way that you could attract moths without plants, this is pretty cool, people like this, is that you could mix up some old beer and rotten fruit that you have hanging around and let it ferment for a few days. And then you can paint it on some of your trees, and that will also attract moths as well.
Old beer and rotten fruit.
Yeah.
I got to say, that doesn't sound as much fun as having a nice garden. I mean, truly, that's not necessarily something I'm going to do. Let's go to a call in Denver, Colorado. Reeves is there. Hi, Reeves.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air. What's your question?
Great. So when I was a young man, I remember standing. I remember there was this huge moth population that just sort of surged. You'd open up your screen door and like 1,000 moths would just sort of fly out. And I remember every morning my dad would go downstairs and there were so many moths in the house. He'd just be standing there vacuuming them out of the air, which is probably poor form for Moth Week. But my big question is, why do we have these huge surges in moth populations every once in a while?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I was telling our director, Charles, before the show, I actually had an experience like this once where I saw just thousands of moths at one time, and then they were all gone by the morning. What happens there? Why does that happen?
Well, that's another great question. And many insect populations, moths included, have what we call boom and bust population cycles. And so some years you get a big boom, and some years you get very few. And it probably, I'm not an expert on this, it's probably dependent on either just random cues or it may be some environmental cues that signal them to have a boom population one year.
Well, I want to thank Elena Tartaglia, who is assistant professor of biology at Bergen Community College in Paramus, New Jersey, co-founder of National Moth Week. If you'd like a how-to guide on collecting moths, head on over to sciencefriday.com/moth. Happy Moth Week. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.